This is October the 30th, 1993. We've had a nice potluck dinner, and this is a meeting with the commander afterward. Greetings, Commander.
Good afternoon. She's the shy one, I'm not. And is she glad I'm here? Please understand, each one of you in your own similar position would be equally embarrassed. Surprises are always nice for somebody else. These are the things that are never supposed to happen to you. Remember that. I appreciate it. It was a very special time. The barrages against her have been tremendous. Some of the things that I will mention are not public yet. I don't object, really, to you ones feeling offended or hurt when the adversarial opponents, who really don't even realize that's what they are, attack. When ones reach out to build the shield around themselves, you have to understand that the lashing out is in desperation. The putting down, the exaggerations, the lies that become involved in the argument, or the thrusts, or the tails, or for the purpose of building me up, putting you down, so that somehow the third party will somehow think better of me than of this other one. I have said that we will not deal with these things anymore. They're time consuming. And maybe on this birthday we can remember that birthdays are death days in counting. Each birthday up until the time when you reach midlife, which isn't 62, by the way, that's over the hill. A child wants to be 5, 6, 7, 8, and then a teenager, and then a mommy or daddy, and then all of these wonderful fantasies that are placed in their heads. But what birthdays really indicate is a counting time to your death, if you think about it. You can feel one more day closer to your passing on. And to some of you, that's a good thing. To others of you, it's a desperate thing. And once you meet that midline, it becomes more desperate than good. Also more embarrassing. And then when you get as old as I am, it doesn't matter. And you keep very quiet about birthdays. You don't ask, as I've heard some of you speculate. It's a good time. There's room enough in here to do this. I would hope you would do it now more often. You can't be a group, but you can be a family, a community. That's what community is. You don't have to agree with each other. You can be enjoyable with each other. And it's the camaraderie that makes it worthy of the journey. And we're grateful. We're grateful for the opportunity of having gotten this far. To some, it will seem almost an impossible task. To others, it will seem as if you will never get to your task. Dharma begins to clutch. It may be the hardest part of my task is over, and it will begin to dwindle off. And we won't interrupt that thought stream for now. I, too, have to live. Just be careful what you do, precious ones. Be careful what you listen to when you're weary. Be careful that you hear correctly what is offered. This represents a place of worthiness to be. But for some, it isn't a pleasant place to be. And there will come a time when it will be less pleasant, maybe. And oh my, what have I just said? There's more to living than just security or a place where you can survive. Those are physical things. The soul must survive in this transition. So I always ask you, and I ask ones to take special note of themselves if illness is taking you over frequently. What is it that is causing you tired? Illness is a meaning of something in disrepair. Are the pressures too great? Is the journey too much? Do you need a rest? Take it. If your call is to somewhere else, go. Listen to me. Go. But do not cut your bridges. Strings? Well, don't, you know. I guess it's burn bridges, cut strings. Go investigate. That can create two things. You are looking through different eyes at a situation. Knowing that it is a vacation, you can be more objective about it. Hey, I really do like it here. Is that because that is the place you should be, or is it so much nicer than where you were with the pressures? Was it because I did not meet something in that other place that I felt uncalled or dismissed or overburdened or whatever the feeling may be? Be very, very careful. And always, only listen partially to another speaker. I don't care who it is. If you say, oh, well, Hatton through Dharma said, get over here right now. You are remiss in your obligation and responsibility to self unless you carefully consider the decision you're about to make and clear it within with your own guides and guidance. And even then, it may not seem right. Allowing for things to take their natural flow instead of pushing that river uphill. You will never get it up that hill unless you get it focused and channeled and block it off down here and then get enough force to push it over. And you're not going to be able to do that by yourself. But don't think that if things are not working in the given situation and you try and you try and you try and it still doesn't work, that necessarily to cut and run is an answer. Now, Dharma has she has a bad habit. When one speak with her, she's usually on their side. You know, son of a gun, you're tired of it here, why don't you consider something else? Well, don't speak for me, precious, is all I can say. because I very well probably have not spoken about it. I would not speak to her about it. So I would suggest that you look carefully at what your talents are, what your education is, what your training is, and where you're headed, possibly. Because ones are not told their missions totally in advance. It is the unusual, the exception, if you know your journey's end before the journey. You wouldn't make it into the journey. You would be taken out if you're in my service. So let us always be very, very careful what we decide to do in acting in haste, because in haste usually means mistakes are made. And if this lesson doesn't fit, discard it. It will fit some. We also have some other problems. I don't know whether to bring it up again or not. Precious Laurie keeps getting stuff now from Montana. I didn't bring this to the meeting before. We wrote about it. These are very painful things. As a matter of fact, this is a letter sent to Laurie yesterday. And it is a letter from Leon Fort to Dave. I won't give his last name. Dorma, in response to this, because Dave then sent it to Dorma, wanted to know, what is this? I believe that we are due some explanations about these accusations. I do not agree with them, but I would be interested in getting an answer. Well, he won't ever ask that again, because she wrote him 25 pages. On the other hand, it gave her an opportunity to clear her soul out a little bit. She didn't ask for this job in her consciousness. And there is always the possibility of misperception. So why, after all of these weeks and months, would this letter come from, obviously, Montana, because the cover thing is from Desiree? Although it doesn't say it is to Laurie to go with this, it is a lesson on choices, as if brought forth by Sananda or someone. Although bless whoever's heart wrote this, and yes, I do know, they did not claim it came from higher resource. Now, ones are faced with this decision. What do you think about it? Facts speak for themselves. And I'm going to speak fact in a minute. Feelings are up to you. But to base choices on emotional, lopsided garbage, I'm sorry, is what has gotten your world to where it is today. I feel a lot stronger about speaking of this in view of what happened last Friday and throughout the prior week. Mr. Green is on another crusade to put the Institute into receivership. Now, what does that mean? It means that he is working on everyone that he knows may be a participant to cause you to make enough flack to put the Institute into receivership. And the idiotic thing is that anybody who would put their own corporation into receivership is not thinking very clearly, because what he is actually saying is what he told the court and filed the paper saying he wants a forced bankruptcy. Now, ones in Florida sent papers. Every statement without exception was untrue. George had sent it. George had followed up with calls. Go to your attorney, find out. I mean, it is just, and even amounts are incorrect. He didn't even bother to spell Overton's name correctly. And then he repeats again and again that the gold was given to him. Then he made his calls to everybody else. Well, he's flubbed. He's hit two or three of them who had just left here. Now, let me start with the most obvious. There have been plenty of divorces caused by this thing out there with them. Oh, Mr. X says, how is that? Who? Do I know them? Yes, you know Mitch and Jan Jaffe. And the one that's already, I mean, a long time now. Yeah, several divorces. You know, Court Christie and Jennifer. Well, he didn't say Jennifer. Court Christie, yeah, they split up over this thing. And Mr. X says, oh, well, now that's really interesting. Now, let's see, what, isn't he the one that, and George interrupts and says, yeah, he's the one with the and starts to say the Constitutional Law Center. And then he, you know, he catches himself. And Mr. X says, well, now, what is his wife's name? And he said, well, Court Christie, you know, the one. And he said, no, I asked you what is his wife's name. Do I know them? Well, he hum-hawed around a little bit, and then he said, well, Jennifer. And Mr. X says, well, that is interesting. Yeah, they got a divorce. She divorced him. She just couldn't stand this thing that was going on out there. And then he talks about John Schrafer and how mad Eleanor was and how Eleanor has over $600,000 into this institute. I mean, come on. There's one thing about even telling truth and those kinds of lies. Is it worth countering? Well, what happens if you don't counter? This gets balled up into a mess in the court. So obviously, here sits Court and Jennifer and their baby. Happily married. Probably one of the happiest couples in this room. Are these things caused from jealousy? What difference does it make? The lies are afoot. So one say, well, what about Mr. Green? Well, I have to wait for you to get your confirmation as it flows back in, and then can come a discussion about the personality involved and whether Desiree knows or not. Of course she doesn't know everything. On the other hand, it is a movement hidden behind her very innocence, because she is one of the most needy of things of anyone you're going to run into. So let me share something else that came from one who met another at a meeting in Colorado. an older man approached, quote, the booth. We'll just put it that way. The exes. This was more than one person. And was very gracious and said, I lived and I will leave this as very close. I'm not going to divulge the identity of this person to George Green. He said, you know, this man was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. His father made millions in the meat business, and he had some special product that he named. And he said his father was a member of the Committee of 300. Everybody hear me? George was groomed to be a member participant also. Their names were not Green. He got crosswise with one of the members and they decided to shut him down. So he was destitute and desperate by the time the Phoenix group, whatever you want to call you, presented itself. Then they wanted him back in the loop of the insiders so they could attend getting rid of you. Makes more sense, doesn't it? His connections with the Tavistock Institute, the Brookings Institute, his relationship with the University of Science and Philosophy, etc., and John Coleman, Joseph Pavlonsky. And I hear, oh, but you're getting back onto those subjects of Bolsheviks and Russians versus U.S. citizens and Mongolians. People, I know it's hard. It's hard to get your players straight. But the only way that you're ever going to reclaim anything is to know your enemy. Know what's happening. And I get just more and more appreciative of ones like Mike who will bother to really find things and then keep us informed. It's your confirmation. For instance, Soldiers of Fortune magazine, I don't want to offend you, Mike. This is one of the bloodiest, most violent offering magazines around. I mean, they advertise every way to kill. You know, get this dandy little handy skinning knife. These are professional mercenary people, along with just Soldiers of Fortune. This would be the place where you would write about the escapades of one Bogreitz and 375 in a village wiped out by one man. This is where you hear the most about the ATF and the SWAT teams. And guess what the issue was about? Guess who's next on the BATF's hit list? They don't quite say it that way, but you can be damn sure it's meant that way. This is a warning. The Clare Prophet group is set up for takeout. Probably the next cult they will take out. And it will not be pretty. They happen to own the third largest piece of property, the old Forbes ranch in Montana. So there is some political clout there just as a landowner. how much nicer to take out them, wouldn't you think? I mean, after all, that must encroach on Mr. Turner's property, where he roams his buffalo. And where is Mr. Green these days? Bozeman, Montana. Well, I don't want to be offensive, but I'll tell you one thing. I hope you let Leon know. This is going to stop. He has just done himself in. Whether Leon broke his own sacred word or his attorney did it for him, George Green has done it all the way for him. In thinking George Green was his friend and Mr. Abbott, his attorney, was his personal closest friend, Leon has been, I think you call it, shafted. And now I'm going to make this public enough that I can get it out here so you know what the hell I'm talking about. The pressures were just so great that the board went to the attorneys and said, what can we do about Leon? He needs to move. He wants to move. He wants some of his money. What can we do? He had an attorney on the phone all the time. Mr. Horton pushing that attorney. And so under demand and under law, a confidential exception was made. When I say a confidential exception, that meant that by law, through agreement, arrangements could be made that were different so that other investors would not be hurt by anything that would take place. So guess what? Let me go back and ask you a little bit of a question. Would you think a document stating an account and the privacy of an account from a place like Wilmington Trust, the biggest holder of gold in the world, do you think they would send out at random a document, a statement of the Institute account? Fortunately, E.J. had worked with them and had gotten things shifted. That statement from June ended up with George Green, who sent it to 13, 14 different people as proof. Somehow, nobody can figure it out, that the Institute is totally insolvent. That came from Leon or his attorney. Well, it becomes obvious it came directly from Leon to George. Because on follow-up, don't ever miss your clues, on follow-up, George Green says to Mr. X, Leon never got his money. Oh, they made an agreement and he's gotten, I'm going to tell you the amount because I want to shock hell out of you. He's gotten $40,000. Well, his attorney's gotten $40,000. Let me give you the bad news. Leon has maybe gotten 16 of it. How do you feel about that? And he got it in three payments. All right, he just did it, didn't he? He just laid out the confidential arrangements and agreements. Now, guess what has to happen under law? It has been disclosed. It is no longer a confidential agreement. And it stops now until it's settled. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry because I wanted this off your necks. And Leon, no wonder, has written, I get things back in little bits and pieces. I guess so. Brother, go talk to your good, friendly attorney. His name is Abbott. It doesn't matter what you think of Hatton. I don't care if you think Hatton is black as the ace of spades or pure as the driven snow. But do not accuse my people when you are doing these things. No one around here has gone out to hurt anyone. In fact, the greatest responsibility and the one sorrow on Dharma's heart, it being her birthday, she had put into her heart, I want John, please, out by my birthday. All you have to do is go down there to break your heart. And now everybody has been banned from going to see him. You are going to get him out. He has no loving input from anyone. Eleanor will not take his calls. She is sole conservator. She has turned over that right to her son that makes it his stepson with whom he never was close. Now she is beginning to fail. We're going to get him out. There's nothing wrong with him. When he can be attended and he can get the things he needs openly. Well, you all witnessed a miracle in watching him. Maybe Jean would tell us where we are with him. Patricia has also spoken with one's Rod, I believe. Maybe we can spend part of today just kind of catching up on some of these things.
Thank you. Turned on? Okay, a lot of good news for John and for all of us people who are interested in John. Last Thursday, Ed Cleary, myself, and Audrey visited with the state investigator, member of the probation department who was appointed by the court to check into John's beans. And he went to great lengths to tell us that because of our efforts down here, the judge has been concerned, probation department has been concerned, he has been concerned, and they were instructed to appoint an attorney for John's benefit. And they appointed a person by the name of Robert Gardner. And I spoke at length with Robert Gardner yesterday. Robert Gardner is a specialist with the Public Defender's Office. He only works with probate cases and guardianship cases. And with a lengthy discussion with him, I explained that we had a petition from at least 40 different persons down here who had a lot of love and respect for John, that we had a lot of information in the manner in which John had been treated before his incarceration, really, and that we had a lot of information that the reason that nobody here could visit with John is because stepson Riley was pulling the strings and would not allow us to visit. His parting statements to me was, I'm supposed to schedule a meeting this week with myself, Ed, and Audrey, and a few other people. And if I present that information to him, bring the petition to him personally, a few declarations, that he will file a motion this coming week to remove Eleanor as the conservator. So that's where we are on that issue. He's willing to come down here and talk with us. Because that was a problem that came up. And I wasn't prepared to accept John. What'd you say?
A public guardian take over?
I don't think so.
Can John take over?
I believe that John will be able to. At least until this can get settled down for him and he can get established into some kind of a routine. If he gets into a situation where he can be cared for and let him get settled and back on his feet, I'm telling you now, he will be all right.
Well, Mr. Carrillo did tell us that he had just received a letter from Ruth Hammond, who is the coordinator for the ombudsman, and that she had mentioned in that letter that John was becoming much more lucid. So that's very good news there. There is a possibility that by the time this matter is heard in court within the next week or two, that John could be well on his way to recovery. Let's hope for that.
We'll cross one bridge at a time. He has a brother. He has a son. He has a nephew in Bakersfield. So wants to help him handle his business matters or his life would be available without having to go outside, or perhaps just what you're talking about, someone could be appointed by the court to help him. What if there were no Eleanor, you see? What would happen to him were there no Eleanor? Something would happen and someone would step in to take some responsibility. And you ones have been quite willing to accept the responsibility. You see what the problem is and why it has come to be this way is they have managed to get all of his pension, all of his retirement, all of everything shifted over, and Rod is managing it. And if this cannot be brought into some kind of resolution, and Eleanor becomes incompetent to manage, which Rod is now beginning to infer is happening, well, I doubt that. But Eleanor was placed separately from the family. You know, this is a very, I started to say unusual, it is not. This is more typical. And so they've got a corner on, quote, the assets that are free. And it does become mandatory if John is to be able to retain anything of his own to get this cleared before the first of the year because of time constraints, etc. But let's just take one step at a time. Let's consider always the important thing, and that is John and his well-being. It has got to be one of the most incredibly horrible things that can happen to a person. If you have created a crime and you end up in prison, you can at least say, well, I did it. I think even if you end up in prison with a clear mind and you didn't do it, you can deal with it on the basis of at least the clarity of thought. And you can go and you can at least get your own attorney, or you can do something to fight it. John has, it's been worse. It was like the orphan or the child dumped on somebody's doorstep. We haul him off to the hospital. We don't attend him there either. Then we put him in an Alzheimer's center where every patient in there is absolutely incapacitated. If you're not mad when you get into that kind of a situation, you will be. And there, but for the grace of God, go any one of you in this room. And aren't you glad that somebody will take the responsibility for John? Because you can likewise know they will take the responsibility for you in the same condition. And don't you think that John will be out there in the front with the flag for you? I am grateful. And maybe it wasn't in time for a birthday present for Dorma, because she was the first one kicked out. We're really dangerous, aren't we? Aren't we dangerous? Well, I guess the truth is dangerous.